Welcome to Coldcase MHS, Monsters and Demons, where real education meets real life. I'm your host, Randy Hubbard.
And I'm your co-host, Lydia Lisco. And we thank you for listening.
Photographs faded, memories grown old. A story entangled, a crime so unfaithful, yet left untold.
Hello, welcome back to Coldcase MHS. As we get into these cases, oftentimes we have a lot of information about who the victim is and where they came from and all their backgrounds. And most of them are fairly recent. In this particular case, they have a victim who was not identified for nearly 40 years. So that makes the case even more difficult to solve. But these students will introduce themselves and talk about their case, but they did such a great job of showing how they went through the process to figure out who she was first, and now that we know who she is, hopefully they can find out who committed the crime.
Hi, I'm Abby.
I'm Lindsay.
Hi, I'm Charvy.
So tell us a little bit about your guys' case.
So our case is the case of Marcia King. She was 21, from Arkansas, and she was found strangled and with lacerations to her liver, blunt force trauma to her head, in Troy, Ohio.
She was found along the side of Greenlee Road. It was a kind of quiet road, but it was busy during the day because most trucks had to go through here between highways, and there was a house in the distance pretty close, and the people that were moving into the house were the ones that found her.
Mm-hmm. She was found on April 24th, 1981, and her body was not identified until April of 2017.
So how did you guys pick this case? We mentioned it was from a long time ago, and we couldn't even identify her body until recently. So why did you decide to pick Marcia King?
It was actually suggested to us. We had connections who were working on it and who had done research on it previously, and we looked into it a little bit and found it really interesting and something that needed a voice. And so after talking to some of those people who had connections and after looking into it, we decided that this would be a good fit for us.
But why did she go unidentified for so long?
So back then, they didn't necessarily have the technology that we do today in order to identify victims. Since Marcia was killed in 1981, it was kind of, and since she wasn't from Ohio, she was from Little Rock, Arkansas, it was kind of hard to figure out who she was. And as for how she was found, her arms were out, her feet were turned in, kind of close together. She was found with no underwear, shoes or socks, but clean feet. And that's just a little bit unusual in terms of that compared to how victims might usually be found on a ditch on the side of the road.
And what did that appear that the suspect did with her?
It looked like the body was positioned and placed there purposefully.
And who does that a lot of times? Who positions a body in certain ways?
Probably more like someone who's done this before. A first-time killer probably wouldn't position her out like this and clean her feet. Someone who had done it before.
So you mentioned earlier the lacerations on her liver and other injuries. Do you know if there's any signs of sexual assault?
There was none. Something in the beginning we looked into was the possibility of a serial killer because it was very close to a highway. It was the 80s where highway murders were not super uncommon. And so that was a big thing that we looked into. And it was a little strange because a lot of them did have signs of sexual assault or like semen found near or around the body, whereas this one did not. There was no semen found. There was no signs of sexual assault. And like she said, she had no underwear. However, there was no signs of forced entry.
No. So in her case, obviously the first thing they had to do was identify who she was. Once they found that out about who she was, tell us a little bit about her background. What kind of person was she? How did she end up in Troy, Ohio?
So Marcia was a really vibrant 21-year-old. She traveled a lot, typically around the eastern and central U.S. It was later found out that Marcia did have bipolar disorder and was schizophrenic. But part of the reason why she traveled so much was she was affiliated with The Way International, which is a non-denominational biblical ministry headquartered in rural Ohio, and she often traveled around with them to different centers in the eastern U.S. and places such as Pennsylvania.
So you mentioned The Way. Do you guys research into them, found out a little bit more about them?
Yes, that was a huge topic of information and kind of research that we did a lot on. They label themselves as non-denominational kind of religious organization. However, when looking on Reddit and places like that, they have been described cult-like and have kind of unorthodox visions and ideals and practices. And so that was something that we thought maybe contributed to her death, or that's how she knew a person who was maybe her killer.
Yeah, so because Troy was not so far away from where the Way International was headquartered, so we thought maybe she hitched a ride with somebody to get up there.
So you mentioned a little bit about Marcia and how she had bipolar disorder. Why do you think she was drawn to the Way?
Very much could have just been that she felt that part of her identity kind of resonated with the Way International. And it's kind of important to note that this isn't super uncommon for Marcia. During her manic episodes, she often referred to herself as the Indian girl, would wear braids, skin-like clothing, which kind of alludes to the buckskin jacket that she was found in. So it's just little tidbits that kind of align with Marcia's identity.
We actually forgot to talk about what she was called for 30-some years and why she was called that, and then the relevance of it that everybody thought was important.
So yeah, she was found wearing a buckskin jacket, and that became like the iconic like token of who she was, because she was unidentified, and so she was labeled as the buckskin girl. Everyone thought it was gonna identify her and kind of be the super like important piece of information when they dug into it, and really it was her cousin had thrifted it from California and she stole it from her cousin. And so when they did pollen testing on it, it showed kind of strange and faulty information that didn't really align with where she was.
But also, her hair color was important because of a connection that you talked about a little bit earlier. Talk a little bit about that. Why was she kind of clumped in with a group of other people?
So she had red hair. She was a 21-year-old female. She traveled a lot. She was high risk. And she was often clumped in with serial killer victims and like spans of murders, such as the Redhead murders. And like I said, this is because she was 21, a year old girl, she had red hair, she was attractive, she traveled a lot, she was high risk. And when you do a search online, you will find about 5 different answers of who was her killer and who they think it was. And someone thinks it is a serial killer, someone thinks it isn't, someone thinks she's a part of this, you know, span of murders. And it's so unclear as to who, like, online when you do a search, who really had a strong connection with her and who didn't, because of how she was clumped in with these groups.
Mm-hmm. So even if you Google Marcia King's name online, you will see that they will often say that she was a victim of the Redhead murders, which we believe is untrue. But also, just to point out, Redhead murders typically occur in the states of Tennessee, Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. And Marcia was found in Ohio, where, for the most part, almost no Redhead murder victims were found in the state of Ohio.
Yeah, so I think that points out a point I want to make. Often when we work on cold cases, the media glorifies serial killers. Everyone's like, oh, this was done by this victim. And we talk so much about serial killers. What can be the dangers of fixating on certain like serial killers?
Well, yeah, we did that in the beginning. We were mainly fixated on serial killers. We were just researching all the ones in the area at the time and that she could be linked to. And we almost didn't really even consider like a one-time off thing. We had like blinders on. And yeah, until we talked to Detective Hickey, who was kind of like, it might not be a serial killer, could be someone that knew her from the Way or for something else. And that kind of started a new pathway of ideas.
Yeah, and I think the big thing about looking at all cases, it's easy to dump it on a serial killer, especially along the highway, things like that, especially from the mid-70s to the early 80s. When technology was not very good and we had a lot of serial killers around. I think it's easy to do that. Detective Hickey was not even, I don't know how old he was at the time. I don't even know if he was born yet.
He was alive.
And when I first met him and talked to him, I realized how young he was. But talk a little bit about him and what he did to push this case to where it is now.
So Detective Hickey is part of the Miami County Sheriff's Department and part of their cold case unit. So He's one of the people that to this day are still working on and investigating Marcia's case, as it still is an open case. Like we said earlier, he wasn't born at the time of Marcia's death, but when he joined the Miami County Sheriff's Department, this is one of the cases that he's picked up. And he's done a lot of work with it. He's one of the people on the initial team with a few other notable individuals that really helped identify Marcia, because it took almost 37 years, but he was one of the people that pushed for new evidence and new research to find her body.
Yeah, he pushed for the pollen testing on her clothes, the isotope test from her hair, and to give her blood to the DNA Doe Project to help find who she was.
The pollen testing, which you mentioned earlier, was done on her clothes, and they took samples of the pollen found on each piece of her clothing, which was her pants, which are jeans, her bra, and her buckskin jacket and sweater. And they found what pollen types were in the fabric, and from there they could figure out what type of trees they came from, and there what part of the U.S. or the world, really, that she was had traveled previously. And from that, it was very conclusive that she was in Pennsylvania, most recently to her death, as well as Kentucky, which we later found out was Louisville. And then previous to that, she was in Texas. Also, the isotope testing was done on her hair, which measured the type of water she drank. And because of they put different chemicals, I guess, in the water, it shows in the hair growth. And you can test that to see what region of the world she was also in because of the differing types of chemicals found in the hair. And so from there, they also had a very similar conclusion as to she was in Kentucky, Pennsylvania, and Texas previous to her death.
So you mentioned all of this testing done to find out who she was. Why did her family never speak up?
At this point, the family didn't even know that she was really missing. Her mom just thought that she was alive somewhere and gone, because she would often leave her house and just like not tell her mom where she was going.
Yeah. I mean, but she went off and got married without telling anybody, yeah, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. We found out that she had a husband stationed at, I believe, an Air Force base.
Fort Worth base,
yeah. In Texas, who was part of the military, and her family didn't know. Her mom, her entire life, stayed in Little Rock, Arkansas, with the same phone number, same address, in hopes that Marcia would ever come back, because she truly did not know that something had happened to Marcia, that Marcia was dead, until after Marcia was identified and the Miami County Sheriff's Department contacted her family.
Well, one of the big things about that is the time period. You know, in the 1980s, what did we not have that you guys have?
Phones.
The internet and all that. Yeah, pictures all over the screen and things like that. You could put them in the newspaper and things like that, but the newspapers it went into were in Ohio and Indiana and Kentucky. They didn't make it to Arkansas, so her family probably wouldn't notice that. The thing that I liked about Detective Hickey was kind of the idea about this class, is that how did he think when he first took the case? He could have been just like any other detective, but how did he think differently than other ones to actually get her identified?
So because he was new on the case, and because he wasn't even alive when the case happened, he was given boxes, I'm sure, of information and paperwork and whatnot, and he tried to sit down and read it all with an open mind, looking just at the facts at the beginning. I think I remember him saying when other people would try to talk to him, he would tell them not to talk to him.
Right.
He would say, I'm trying to look at this, you know, from a very open-minded perspective, and, you know, just look at the facts first and then try to dig in so you don't get those blinders on, which I think is, like you said, very true to this case. And honestly, life, just really trying to keep an open mind, and just cases in general as well.
You know, and he thought outside of the case itself. You know, to think about the testing of pollen and the testing of the water and all that kind of stuff, that took a lot of brain power to think of that, because nobody else had thought about that for all those years. So I think that's really important about what the work he did, and I kind of think that's the same thing that you guys did. You guys started to delve into different ideas that maybe other people hadn't thought of, and that's one of the things I hope that you got out of this class.
So I was just about to ask, we talked a lot about other people's processes. Take me through how you guys started your investigation of the Marcia case.
So initially, we kind of started our research the way I feel like any other group would have. We kind of just looked at the facts that were present. The Ohio State Attorney, they have a few information about Marcia on their website, which is kind of where we like kind of started to comb through. We spent a lot of time researching online through different podcasts, websites, articles, just trying to find as much as we could about Marcia that we caught online that was just public information. And then kind of after that, we started to notice that, like we said earlier, Marcia had had a lot of tests conducted on her. The isotope testing, the pollen testing, and then something that we haven't spoken about yet was the forensic genealogy component of the case. And so what helped us a lot was we reached out to Dr. Murray at Mount St. Joseph University. She was one of the people that worked on the forensic genealogy part of this case with the DNA Doe project. And we met with her twice, and honestly, that was the majority of how we got all of our information on this case.
So explain a little bit about this forensic genealogy.
Yeah, so after the pollen and isotope testing, she was still unidentified. No one had claimed her as their daughter. She was still a Jane Doe. And so as a last resort, they had, in 2017, they had leftover blood, which was unrefrigerated and kind of almost a lost cause. And they sent it to a forensic genealogist, and they had it tested to see if maybe possibly they could get some DNA out of it. And after that, by some miracle, they did, and that was how she was identified. I think they matched her to her second cousin that had put his DNA information like Ancestry.com or some ancestral website or organization like that.
Yeah, the forensic genealogy measures these SNPs, so it measures the single nucleotide polymorphisms, and it's just like however in common you are with like a family member, like you and a sibling, you'll have more SNPs in common. You and your second cousin, like how Marcia is connected, will have a certain amount of SNPs, and they were able to find the second cousin, track it back to her mother, and then they contacted her, got a sample of her DNA, and it was a match. It was her mother.
Mm-hmm. So whenever you upload your DNA sample to sites like 23andMe and those type of things, that database is shared federally. So
can't you opt in to
you
share
can,
it?
You can opt
yeah.
in now, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that.
It's a choice. Yeah. So her second cousin had uploaded their DNA, which is how they were able to find a match between his SNPs and then Marcia's. And based off that, they were basically able to track back to her mother.
This was a really big thing, because this was a really new technology. And something I think that bothers all of us about this case is the Golden State Killer also was found using this technology. I think it was 3 days before this one was.
Yeah.
This one was going to be the first. And so, unfortunately, it didn't get as much press as it would have because the Golden State Killer was 3 days beforehand.
Right, and getting back to the opting in thing, when the Golden State Killer was identified, and I think it was actually a little bit closer than that, mm-hmm. when they were going to identify her, it was almost like they were doing a race. And that case obviously took over. But what happened is that once the police did that with those two cases, they started going back to all their cold cases, and some people felt like their privacy was being infringed on by putting that database into the national database. So they have to opt in now to do that, which if you do Ancestry.com and that kind of stuff, please opt in, because this case is have been solved. Now, I know people worried about, what if I have a serial killer in my background? Well, you didn't do it. So it helps some of these cases that are out there.
And I just do want to say, all of this is very heavy, intelligent stuff. So you guys are all extremely intelligent for being able to understand this, because I remember during your presentation, I was just in awe. I was like, I had no idea any of this was even a thing. And I just want to say thank you for, you guys explained it so well. Do you guys take like AP science classes here at the high school? Do you think that helped you get into this case and understand all of the scientific process around it a little bit better?
Mm-hmm, definitely. I would say that taking AP Bio and AP Chem definitely helped, especially AP Bio, because we spend a lot of time obviously in that class talking about things at like a more molecular level. So like I would say honestly maybe like a week or two prior to us realizing that forensic genealogy was done on this case using those SMPs. We spent maybe about 2 weeks prior to that. I learned about SMPs and EPBio. So that kind of just
like, I know this.
So it really just helps make those connections, and it's really nice that classes like Cold Case, I'm able to build on my knowledge from other classes.
And not only like those hard skills you learn in those AP Bio classes, I feel like Cold Case also has a lot of soft skills. So what kind of soft skills do you think you've learned from Cold Case in your process?
I would say, I mean, even in the interviews for this class, you're asked about, you know, what role do you think you fit in? Are you leader? Are you a communicator? Are you a data finder? And I feel like we all really embodied these roles. And like Charvi here, she was our communicator. She was sending all of our emails. Love her. I'll send it tonight. Yes, thank you. Like it was really like interesting to see us all kind of really step up into those roles. And I think it really helped us develop that side of our personality and also just soft skills, like you said, in general.
Mm-hmm. So part of that was like kind of figuring out how to communicate and collaborate with each other, but then also going on into different soft skills, communicating, collaborating with people that aren't in this class. We reached out to people like Detective Hickey, Dr. Murray at Mount St. Joseph, but one person that we also reached out to was one of the three individuals that actually found Marcia lying in that ditch, and that individual is about 80 years old now. So I think that part of it was we just randomly called him one day. We found his home phone number online, and we kind of just called him, and part of it was being able to talk to him with empathy, with respect, because we're bringing up something that he said that he still thinks about almost daily, finding Marcia, and just being able to kind of ask him about that case and ask him about that day and his experience with it.
So getting back to Marcia a little bit, we talked a little bit about how she was left out there. One of the things I will say is Detective Hickey was very gracious to talk to us and showed us some information that we obviously can't share. But one of the things we can talk about is how she was left out and on the side of the road. So when you said her arms were stretched out and things like that, what did it kind of appear as if you were walking up to it later, especially after you talked about the way, what did it kind of appear as if maybe was happening there?
It definitely kind of looked like a cross with her arms out, her feet turned in together, and her like laying face down. And if it was a cross, there's all these sort of like religious like metaphors that could be applied here, because her feet were cleaned. That could be like the cleansing of sins of her. Also, that she was facing down. She could be looking down to hell or something.
What do you think that says about her killer?
Definitely has some sort of religious connection, whether it might just be that they played into Marcia's connections with religion. Maybe they had one themselves. It kind of just depends, but there is some aspect of religion and most likely Christianity with that.
Yeah, so there was a few different theories that emerged from this. Talking with different people, they seemingly had different theories and, you know, path of ideas, I suppose. One of them was that this was a hitchhiker, that she was trying to travel to Knoxville, Ohio, which was the headquarters for the way, and something went wrong and they killed her. She was left on the side of the road, and it was a one-time interaction. Another person had a theory that this was more of a religious tie, and that it was maybe not even Marcia's guilt, but the killer's guilt for killing her.
And the fact that she was so close to the way, or where she was found, it does, and not that we are accusing anybody from the way or anything to be involved with that. I actually think even if they were involved the way, I don't think the way itself would know who that person is. But I think it was something in their head, something that they believed or were trying to cleanse themselves from when they did it. Because one, you talked about she's a hitchhiker. She was kind of known just to get up and go. Back then, people did hitchhike. The only thing about the highway killers and things about that time is that very rarely would they position the bodies in a specific way. Or if they did, it was usually in a sexual position of some sort, not in a cross, which is kind of unusual. So did we happen to find any other cases like that?
Not really. We were told that there was possibly some. However, we never really got information on that, and we were struggling to find any case which really, like, you could see a strong correlation. There was cases here and there that had little things in common, but nothing that really stuck out to us as, like, I think that's the same person.
And so you talked about other people's theories. What are your guys' specific theories that you have regarding this case?
Primarily that this was most likely someone that she knew. Because one thing about Marcy is that we said that she traveled a lot, and we can go a bit more in depth about that later, but she was definitely with someone at the time prior to death. Because Marcy wasn't exactly on the highway, she was on a road, I want to say about like 5-10 minutes off of it. She was definitely going with someone in a vehicle of some sort, and I would say that even if you're just hitchhiking, you still to some extent have met that person and know them. And it could have been an interaction that went wrong, but we believe that it could have been someone that she knew.
I mean, it's hard to pinpoint a certain theory that we have, because there's so much evidence that points to so many different things. And so one of them that we were, like we said before, she hitchhiked with someone, an interaction went awry, and she was killed and dumped. Again, the other one was she was killed by someone affiliated with the Way, whether she knew them previous to that moment or maybe even for a few hours. We do think, like Charvy said, that it was someone that she at least felt semi-comfortable with, and that it was someone she had spent some time with before her death. Another theory that was brought up was that it was the work of a female, or maybe even both a female and a male, and that they could have engaged in sexual activities beforehand, and that was some sort of ritual along with the death. And again, partially maybe through the way she knew these people.
One of the big things about trying to figure out that is that time. I mean, the time has just been, they took them, what, 35, 36 years to identify her?
37 years, yeah. 30, so it's a really long time.
So 37 years to identify her, then you have to go back and try to look at the evidence to figure out who she could have came in contact with. And that's extremely hard to do, especially in when technology was not what it is today. The other thing about her, you mentioned that it could have been one person, two people, things like that. There was a little bit of evidence about what kind of vehicle she might have been in and how they got her to that spot. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so like her jeans had small like rips or like worn down spots in the shape of a circle on like the back of her heels. So we thought maybe that she was in the back of a truck and then meant to be picked up like by her elbows or like her armpits and then dragged out, and then her pants snagged on the truck bed. Okay. So maybe the person would have driven a truck, like a pickup truck, or it could have even been like a bigger one.
Mm-hmm. And there was also some blunt force trauma on her head that we thought might have been someone hitting her with the crowbar or some other thing, that type of sort, because there were two different distinct spots of injury that kind of had a mark similar to that.
So how she was laying, with the idea that you talked about, they would have had to drag her to that spot. Mm-hmm. But what was, there wasn't one on her feet.
Yeah.
There wasn't any dirt or drag marks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that does kind of lead to the theory that somebody drug her off the truck, but maybe somebody helped them take her into the ditch. So
yeah. That's
a little stuff that you guys had to look at along the way. I think the biggest part that I was impressed with you guys was the effort you made to get a hold of those experts and the way you talked to them, because Dr. Murray is not easy to get a hold of. And when I sat here and listened to you guys talk to her, and she was excited to talk to you, and things like that, which is great. What did you learn from her in that interaction with her? Not just the technology stuff, but just how did you feel about having to contact somebody like that?
I was super honored to be talking with her. She, when we reached out, she was super amazing with responding to emails and such, and being super helpful with everything and the slideshows, and learning about this information was super amazing, especially from her, who is such an expert in this field. And so that was very cool to listen and kind of think like what a kind of niche thing that really makes a big difference in like the world of cold cases.
Mm-hmm. Because especially since Dr. Murray, like, she worked on this case. She's not just an individual that has knowledge on it and might have researched it on her own free time. She worked on it, and she really knew what she was talking about, and she had so much to share with us, which honestly we would know so little about Marcia and not just about her case, but also who she was as a person if it wasn't for Dr. Murray.
You talked with all of these incredible professionals. How do you think that's going to help you later in life?
I think just, like you said, those soft skills of learning to communicate with maybe people who are the experts and you know you're kind of, I don't want to say inferior, but you know less than them. And so being able to open-mindedly learn from them and also have them excited to teach you is a super awesome thing, and it's really rewarding. And I think it's rewarding on both ends. However, like you said, it will really help later in life in learning how to have those conversations and reach out and just ask for information from those types of people.
And it also can be hard because we are a high school class, right. So it may be difficult for, like you said, professionals to take us seriously, but I think you guys did an excellent job of presenting yourselves maturely and able and willing to learn all of this information. So I think you guys did an excellent job with that.
And I think what is happening now, and it's not just because of our class, but I think we have a little bit to do with it.
We'll take it, yes.
Is that they're starting to realize having more eyes on a case like that, and they get an opportunity to teach you guys something without being in a classroom. And I think a lot of teachers like that part of stuff, especially when you're talking about something that could help in a family, an individual down the road. So I think that's great that you guys got that information from her and you understand, you know, how it is to talk to those people and learn from them along the way. The thing about her case, if it's been so long, there was a bit of evidence that we have to be careful about talking about, but it is important that it's still out there. And we do think there could be a connection somewhere local with that case. Talk a little bit about that evidence, hopefully without giving too much information, because we'll have to edit that. But.
So what it is that there was an important piece of evidence found in a important location on Marcia's body. And that evidence is currently being tested. And what Detective Hickey and the other people working on this case hope is that evidence might lead to some more clues that might point to the individual who did this and might honestly be what ends up closing the case.
Why do you think police hold back that information?
Kind of just specifically so that the information doesn't really fall into the wrong hands, that it's not used as a way, I guess, to say, to get away from law enforcement. But reality that they're able to continue investigating and kind of go through their processes while that information still remains confidential so that they can hopefully close it and things end the way that they should.
And also sometimes police deliberately hold back information because if only the killer knows something and if someone says something during an interview and they know that we haven't released that to the public, that could make them more involved and originally believed.
Another thing is with serial killers, Detective Hickey was describing how he talked to some of them, and something about them is they like to take credit for murders that sometimes aren't theirs. And so when he talked to them, he found that a lot of them were not a good fit, even though they claimed it was her. They couldn't tell anything about her, they couldn't tell the location, how they did it. It was all false information. And so by withholding that information, it kind of helps weed out those people who may want to take credit for it, for attention, for whatever reason, and can help you really get to the bottom of this case.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand those kind of people, but there's a lot of people that want to do that, take credit for something like that. I don't understand. But anyways. Do you think that they'll solve this case?
I really hope so, but the evidence that they found, it might not, the person who was belonged to might not have been the killer. It could have just been someone who interacted with her sometime before her death. Doesn't necessarily mean that it was the killer.
The evidence still is circumstantial. As much as we all really, really, really hope that Marcia's case is solved, that there is justice for not only her, but for the rest of her family members, it's a little bit less possible, but we are still really hopeful that something might come through. Even if the individual is no longer alive, as many people connected to this case are now because of how long ago it was, we do hope that there is something.
If people do have information about Marcia's case, you can contact us at coldcase@masonohioschools.com.
Mm-hmm. And Miami County Sheriff's Department phone number is 937-440-5900.
And I hope that one day that we'll be able to solve this case. I think with technology, we have a better chance. Mm-hmm. And I also think with a guy like Detective Hickey, who won't give up, and I think that's the biggest thing in these cold cases is having somebody to continue advocating. And I think that is something I think he's probably going to do. And the fact that you guys brought it out again and people are seeing the story again in a different light, I think, because most of the people read an article. The articles are not very long about her. And the fact that you guys found all that information, hopefully somebody else will hear this and bring that information out. Just an update on Marcia's case. After speaking with Detective Hickey, it seems that things are going very well. It seems like he is very positive that something big could happen in the next year or so. And we just hope that means Marcia's case will be solved and justice will be served. Thank you for listening to Cold Case MHS Season 4. We really appreciate all the support that we have gotten over the years. Each year that I do this, I always have a co-host or several, but this one's a little special. She's been with me for a while now, and she has done an extensive amount of work on the editing and producing of this podcast. And at the end of each year, I have to watch my senior leave, and it's almost like she is a daughter to me as I watch her graduate and move on to go to Alabama. And I just wanted to say thank you. I appreciate all that you have done for me and done for this podcast, because without you, it wouldn't have happened. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of talk a little bit about your experience, both in the class and as my co-host, and as you move on to something new.
Yeah, when I look back on high school and think, what are some of the major milestones that I've done with my time here at Mason High School, Cold Case is going to be probably one of the major highlights. What we do in this class is so special. It's so unlike anything else that I probably will do for in the rest of my life and anything else I've done at high school. And it's just the amount of work that we do into looking into these victims and trying to get their stories back out there, contacting family members, friends. It's hard. It's really difficult to look into somebody else's tragedy and try to just reignite it to get these people back out there, because there are so many people's names who've been forgotten, either because of lack of time, lack of evidence, and just that people aren't willing to speak up for these poor victims. And the fact that I get to be a part of something as special as this, that we get to look into these victims and try to get their names back out there, it's so special for me. And I'm gonna carry this with me forever. And I just want to say thank you for starting this class, Mr. Hubbard, because we've done some amazing work, not just in our year, but in all the years that you and your student who you created it with have done. And without you, this program would not be where it is. And I know it's going to sorely miss you when you have to say goodbye.
Well, and I want to say, each year, I get emotional every time I do this. The kids are my kids, and I truly appreciate all that they do. But people like Kylie Gigliotti, Ashlyn Gigliotti, Lydia, all of you have been so special in making this happen. And it's become something as a passion for me to bring these stories back out. And I think the best way to do that is through young people like you, because you have the energy, you have the time, you want to help people. And I think that that's tremendous. So the podcast itself was something I threw at kids a couple years ago, right in the middle of the year, said, hey, by the way, we're going to do a podcast. So at the time, they weren't real thrilled with me. But once we did it, they really appreciated the opportunity to do that. And I think it's very important that we continue to keep bringing these stories out however we can. You know, we have the presentations at the end of the year, which I want you to talk a little bit more about those in a little bit. And then we have this podcast, which we're trying to reach out to say, if you know anything about these stories, please tell somebody. Please contact the police, do something. Even if you don't think it's important, it could be. Tell us a little bit about your participation in this part, the podcast part.
So I think what's so great about the podcast is, especially this season when we tried something a little bit new, you can really see the passion and the hard work that these students have put into this cold case. I just remember listening to some of these stories, and the students know so much about their victims and like all of the research that they did, and a chance to share it, not in a formal presentation setting, but just talking and just being like, this is so terrible what happened. You really like your influence on your passion for your own case that you're doing is really, really shines through on when they get a chance to do it. And being a part of the podcast, and I do have some editing experience and just helping out with that, but it's just such a great experience to listen to the students tell the story, because that's what it is.
Right.
And it's just been so special to see it in a different setting, and just because sometimes the presentation, you're like, oh, we have to focus on being professional, we have a time limit. In the podcast, you can just say everything, and I feel so fortunate that I get a chance to be a part of it, help edit some of the little maybe mistakes that people make, and just help people just tell the story that they want to tell. And I think that's what's so special about podcasts, and the fact that we get to share it with everybody, and it's out there and anyone can listen to it. You can share it with your family, friends. I know my mom actively enjoys listening to the podcast because she just loves like hearing all the hard work that kids have done.
Right.
So being a part of this podcast is really special, even though it may have seemed like a little last minute thing when you first thought of it. I think it's truly grown into something that's really huge.
Right. And I think the big thing about it is that these are created by you, the students. Mm-hmm. You know, I just talk a lot. You know, you guys are the ones that, you know, produce it and do those kind of the work and do the things for the podcast. And I think that's important for people to know that most of the stuff that's done on this is done by students. One, because I'm not very good at technology. But two, because that's the whole point. You guys put all the work in. I want to say thank you for all that you've done for us. Hate to see you go.
Don't worry, I'll be back.
And the other sad part about this, I guess, is that this is pretty much my swan song as well. I retire 34 years.
And I just want to say, I can't speak for all the students, but thank you for everything you've done. Like when I said this cold case program wouldn't be the same without you, Mason High School is not going to be the same without you. You've done so much for your students. I know Mr. Hubbard is not allowed to give commencement speeches anymore because the kids pick him every year if we could. He's just done so much to shape who we are as people, who we grow into when we go into the real world as we head into college. And I just know without him, I would not be who I am today. He has made me more confident. He's given me the ability to speak to people who I never thought I would. He's, by creating this class and just by being the amazing person that he is, he's just done so much for us that he'll probably never even know. And I'm so grateful that I had a chance to be with him for 2 years. He had to deal with me.
Exactly.
So thank you so much.
I appreciate that. And I hope that everybody has learned a lot along the way.
Yes.
I'm not good at goodbyes, but Mr. Paul Berry is going to take over after this, and you will listen to him in season 3. He's very good at it, and he's going to be really good at this. It has been a special treat for me to take something from nothing and to get it to where we are now. I hope that people will listen to these podcasts and continue to listen to them after we're done this year, because the information in here is so important for people. And I really appreciate all the students that have been involved, all those that have helped me out along the way. And I would just want to say thank you and goodbye and good luck to whoever takes over this podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of Cold Case MHS.
This podcast was edited by the students of Cold Case MHS and produced by Mr. Hubbard and myself. The music was performed and written by Alexa Dahl, and the artwork was created by the students of MHS Design Studio Internship.
Please consider sharing this podcast to bring more light to these victims. Tune in next time to Cold Case MHS, Monsters and Demons.
Photographs faded, memories grown old. A story entangled, a crime so unfaithful, yet left untold. A puzzle in the dark, we will find that spark. There you've left their mark. Victims in memory, let's find the enemy. We won't leave it be. Behind every shadow, a story to be told. Of lies that were special, but some hearts have grown cold. In the depths of the darkness, a flicker of hope remains. Behind every cold case, there's people fighting nature.